Right, all you movie junkies. It is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim.
And welcome to the reincarnated SLS Cast.
We have a new score. We have an orchestra here.
It was a fanfare idea that we thought we would try for a new intro. Turns out it's not going to make it past this, 10 seconds. I am your one of the hosts, Matt, and we have,
and this is Tim. You remember
yes.
me?
Yeah. No. for those who are being reintroduced to our little franchise here, Tim and I started this podcast about a year and a half ago. We were working together at a pizza joint as delivery drivers, and we thought that, hey, I barely know you and you barely know me. Let's do a movie podcast. And so
we went out on a couple dates and we discussed it.
Bought drinks, drinks were had. Condoms were worn, whatever.
And sharing pizzas, sharing an extra large.
And so we came up with the idea and a fun format for a show that was going to be about movies and news and a little bit of TV and stuff like that. And so that worked really well. Unfortunately, personal lives and just really and truly life just got in the way. It turned out that as much as we enjoyed our time together and as much as we really enjoyed doing the show, our lives just completely started veering away from one another so that we could not get together to just consistently record the show. It literally just, the show fell into hiatus, and in the meantime, I've had an extra kid. Tim, you are not even in Texas anymore. Where are you?
California.
There you go. He got on with the Clampets. And
I did. I have one of those fancy dinner-eating tables. What is it, the pool table where you put their, chicken wings in? Right?
Yeah, where you have your vittles. And so we came back together about a month and a half ago, and, tried to remesh our lives and worked through our dramas and our lives and got everything back together. And now we have a new format for the show. It's pretty similar, except now we have something new. And by something new, it's not borrowed or blue, but it's just a dude. And new dude, introduce thyself.
I'm Mike. And I am, yes, a dude.
That's right.
But I'm not the dude.
No. Do you abide, though?
Yes, I'm imbibing right now.
Very good. But do you abide?
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah.
Not imbibe, which he also did, but abide.
Yes, I do.
Okay, very cool.
Imbibes? What do you mean by imbibe? How can one imbibe?
Imbibe is to
drink.
I did not know that.
Oh.
Is this like a...
I'm already adding to the show.
You are. You will find that happening often. I assure you on that, sir.
Yes, Mike is not only going to be filling in as a co-host for us, but he is also going to be our editor. So now whenever we don't sound as awesome as we should, you have someone to blame. It's not me, and it's not Tim.
Computers only have so much magic.
Hey, I sounded just beautiful enough before, and so did Tim. Okay, the dulcet tones that were Tim and Matt can still be had. As you can hear, I guess, things have not changed that much. But we do have a couple of new segments that we're going to be trying out and switching out that we hope you'll enjoy. One of them is an essay segment that we will not be having this week, but it's an essay segment where anyone who feels like they would like to submit an essay, as Tim put it, in an Andy Rooney style, but you gotta say how you said it to me.
I don't remember.
You basically said it was an Andy Rooney style segment from 60 Minutes, but
with more talent, insane. Can't be too insane.
And less eyebrow.
Yeah, less eyebrow, and you wouldn't be. I mean, if your children can come near that paper, then send it in. I mean, I would not. I mean,
how have you ever noticed how old people have eyebrows that you could actually cling on to and climb?
Dana Carvey
What is that about, anyway?
Too soon?
Have you ever heard that expression, does a bear shit in the woods? Have you ever seen a bear shit in the woods? Dana Carvey did something like that. He's just a ridiculous guy. But yes, no, exactly. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Have you ever heard that there was a color black? I don't. You know, these are the
color purple?
Yeah. What? Why would somebody call a book the color purple and then never bring the purple up in it? I don't understand. Have you ever seen a bottle of aspirin? They got this bottle, and you can shake it, and it doesn't make a sound because you think it's so full. But then when you pop it open, it's half full of cotton. Maybe they should call it Cotton Sprin.
And then back to the color purple, the book is not even purple. What the hell is wrong with that?
Thus concludes RooneyCast.
And my brother, he's still 3 feet tall. RooneyCast. You know now,
It's Rooney Mara.
We have a new segment. We have a new segment for the show that we just came up with. It's called RooneyCast. Thank you, Mike. That's awesome. Huh? Okay, so. So we have a segment. It's an essay segment, and anybody can submit it. If one of us has an idea about something or something that we just want to discuss briefly, we'll present it as an essay and then discuss it. Another segment is going to be something, basically, it's franchises, regardless of whether or not they have been made into movies, that should or should not be made into movies. And we're going to actually lead off with that tonight on this episode. So we're hoping that you will get a kick out of that segment. Gone is the classic TV. We're not to really focus on just the movies. We're going to go ahead and drop the Twilight Zone. It's an amazing show. Definitely recommend that you should watch it if you ever get the chance. And it's an anthology, so you can always jump in anywhere. If you ever see it on late at night, just keep it on. It's good.
And as a side note, they just released a brand new Blu-ray version of it. It's supposed to be really super cool. So, and
again, one of the amazing things about the longevity of film, technically speaking, is that black and white will always age better than the color because of just the way it's made. And so when you see stuff now that they've brought into Blu-ray and everything, they don't have to do as much touching up on it as they do when they're remastering all the color stuff. It's just naturally designed for better definition. So it'll look really good too. So we're not going to be doing Twilight Zone anymore or classic TV. We will still have a classic movie recommendation. May or may not be every episode, but we definitely want to try and make sure that the classic genre is always well represented among us. We will basically, in addition, we'll always be doing news, and we're still going to do 3 Squared. And what's really cool now is that we can keep 3 Squared as 3 Squared, and the math finally works, because 3 Squared is 9, and now you'll finally start getting 9 freaking recommendations. Won't be this episode, though. Anyway, so we'll still have news, and we may not do quite as many movies, just so that we can have more in-depth movies. So we'll always have at least 2, but we may not have 3 like we used to always.
Yeah, because guess what, folks? You might actually learn something this time.
Yes, exactly.
Not how pissed off we can get.
Yeah, aside from that, actually. Aside from how petty and stupid we can learn how to argue. Fucking rubber. God damn it.
Hobo with a goddamn shotgun.
Yeah, I like Hobo with a shotgun.
Yeah, well... Join the pond of people.
I also liked a Serbian film, which not a lot of people
saw. Oh, I watched that recently. Oh, that's a recommendation for you, Matt, in the future.
Yeah.
What's that, a Serbian film?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll talk about that one later. That's another tangent right there.
Okay, awesome. All right. And, so here we are with the new, kinder, gentler SLS cast. So I guess I think that pretty much covers all the shifts and changes for the moment, yeah?
Yeah.
Did I get it?
You did. You did well.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. So just briefly recap what's going on currently. I'm still in school, wrapping up another semester, one step closer to the long-term goal of the master's degree in history so that I can teach college. And Tim, briefly, what are you doing currently?
I am in California working at a school, just one step closer to reach my dream job of working at a studio. So I'm kind of on the same level. like we are on the same level in our career path.
Awesome. And Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm Mike. I'm 27. While in a relationship. Oh wait, wrong thing. I my
it
normal
is
job
right
is
there, Mr. Travia. Tell us more.
Okay, wait. No more Bane. No Bane yet, at least. So normally I'm a photographer, but for now I'm now recording and editing this podcast. And I have always been a movie fan.
I'm sorry, I got to ask. What does recording and editing a podcast have to do with photography?
Oh, it has nothing to do with it, but I just, I've always wanted to do a podcast, actually.
Well, we're glad to have you, Michael.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here. You're here.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Carry on, my friend.
As far as movie-wise, my breakdown real fast is, first I wanted to be an actor, then I realized I'm not good at that. Then I wanted to be a director, or a writer first, and I realized I'm really not good at that. Then I realized maybe I could be a director, and I realized I'm really not good at that, because people don't listen to me. And then I realized, well, I'll just be a photographer, and I can also be a DP and stuff like that. So, my movies have always been part of my life. Born and raised in Los Angeles also, so I've always been around it. And yeah, I just like movies a lot.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's interesting though that, you know, you like movies a lot. And as far as I'm concerned, I think that, I don't think that anybody can just walk off the street and say, I've seen 100 movies, so I'm qualified to do a podcast.
Yeah.
But I really think that if you do have a command of the English language, a decent command of the English language, you have seen enough movies to understand, not just see them, but to see them and understand what makes a good movie and what makes a bad movie. I really do think that you can, that you don't have to have the formal Roger Ebert journalism training and whatever, you know, as a prerequisite to talk about movies. And that's one of the things that we had maintained when we were originally doing the show, and that's something that we're going to be bringing forward with this iteration as well. So, for anybody who has seen or heard of a documentary called Heckler, we're definitely not in the fanboy or hater camp, but I really do think that as a member of the viewing public, that people who make movies, they're making them for us. I think that by extension, that gives us the right to do what we're doing. And so we're going to try and do that to the best of our ability. Right, guys?
Yeah.
Y'all.
Awesome. So let's get started with some news. In the spirit of really doing this thing right, I have absolutely no news because I'm going to leech off of Tim, who has news that I disagree with or agree with when he disagrees. Carry on, good sir.
Alrighty. So I have nothing like life-changing news really going on, but if you're a fan of Star Wars and Arnold Schwarzenegger, I kind of think you've got to be creaming your pants or this past like month or two, you know, just ever since like you've heard of like Arnold Schwarzenegger coming back into acting and taking on basically every single one of his classic roles again. It's kind of like just it gives the fanboys something more to look forward to in addition to the Marvel flicks, the DC flicks, and as well as Star Wars, which I'm going to go ahead and start this newscast off talking about the new Conan the Barbarian movie. As you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger did the original two. What was it, like in the 70s or 80s? Late 70s? Early
80s? Yeah,
very
80s. Late 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. Early 80s. First one was good. Second one was actually pretty good. They recently came out with a newer one, which was pretty damn bad with, what's his name?
I don't know.
Mina. Well, they're wanting to go back to the books. And this one guy, he's screenwriter producer Chris Morgan. He's the guy that I think he wrote and produced Wanted. But he's wanting to bring back Conan the Barbarian with Arnold Schwarzenegger reprising the role. But of course, not as a younger Conan. It's going to be age appropriate. He's going to be an older Conan. He has his kingdom. He's, you know, running the kingdom. And basically, he's going to go through all the old man, you know, trying to get strong again and take back the kingdom from whatever is attacking his, you know, posing a threat and whatnot, and defeating the evils of.
So the Dark Conan Rises.
Pretty much, the Dark Conan Rises.
Well, that's actually
striking back. Or yeah.
Sure, no, and honestly, that sounds like it could be if it. Again, the biggest word in the whole wide world is if. So if it's done right, sure, I think that could work really, really well. They have an MMO out. It's called Conan. Conan the Barbarian, Legends of Hyboria, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I was, I actually did play it briefly a few years back to try it out. And it's interesting because it does continue the saga of its post-Conan, you know, gaining the throne. And so you're tasked with basically in your different races and stuff, but you're tasked with trying to figure out what's going on. You do eventually meet Conan, and he's fighting. He's desperately trying to keep the kingdom together. And so if they go back to the books and they show an aging Conan struggling to hold it all together, I think that that's going to not only appease the fan base, but really allow for some depth in the movie.
Right.
The question becomes, can Schwarzenegger provide depth to a character?
Right, and this is what, I'm going to read what, because Morgan spoke with Hero Complex, they did an interview, and I'm just going to read a little paragraph, I guess, what he said. He's not going, Conan, is not going out and fighting battles, but he ends up getting drawn into something. He has to access the barbarian he was in his youth. I love that Conan has been many things in his life, notably a pirate, a major tactician, and a commander of men. In this movie, we're going to tap into some of those things, things you haven't seen on screen yet. And I guess he was referencing the original Conan stories, which were written by Robert E. Howard. And apparently he's a really big fan of not only those, but also the John Milius movie. So I guess it's really going to be a definite sequel to the first two. So hopefully it'll kind of capture the whole fantasy, macho, you know, just like the macho man action movies that we've kind of been, you know, deprived of for the past 15, 20 years or so.
Which is kind of sad that we have to go back to someone who is currently 15 or 20 years older than he was when he was last popular for being the badass heavy duty.
Right, and it's kind of like the same plot for the next movie he's doing, The Last Stand, where he's like the small town sheriff, the small town country sheriff, and he has to stop these like these cartels or something, I guess, going into Mexico. Or are you topping the border? Yes, they have to go through his town, so he has to stop them.
And it sounds like Walking Tall.
You know, I was thinking that too. Yeah, 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 Walking Tall,
which is also a remake. You think? Yeah, because there was the original, and then there was a remake with The Rock.
The Rock. Yeah, and oddly enough, Walking Tall also had what's his name from Jackass in it.
You
know, the Jackass.
Yeah, the main guy.
Can't remember Johnny Knoxville?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and Johnny Knoxville's in The Last Stand as well, playing pretty much the same goofy-ass,
yeah,
you know, partner, character guy. But, yeah, yeah. But anyways, the movie might be called Legend of Conan. He got Arnold Schwarzenegger to, I guess, you know, do it if they actually make it. So that is actually looking pretty good, because it looks like whatever Arnold wants to do, it will probably happen.
It's currently not on Arnold's IMDb page, though.
Oh, it's
as,
not?
Like, in, as post as pre-production or anything like that.
But to be in all fairness, Arrested Development has been on IMDb for the past 8 years. and also in, I guess, Terminator news, other Arnold news, but it might not actually have to deal with or pertain to Arnold. Megan Ellis, who produced and financed Killing Them Softly, which we were talking about how piss poor that movie has been doing so far.
Yeah.
She did the master with Anderson, and also the new movie coming out, Zero Dark Thirty. Well, she's willing to come out with another Terminator movie. Apparently, she bought the franchise a year and a half ago, and she's wanting to continue on with it. And of course, John Connor's going to be older. More than likely, they're not going to bring back Christian Bale because of his little rant he did whenever
he
they
wanted,
were.
He just wanted things done right.
Yeah, that and he liked smacking around family members. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes if your mom and your sister don't come up to you and give you a hug or anything, you just want to smack them in the face.
He's Batman.
He is Batman. Yeah. I am Batman. I know you're reaching for that glass, dude, Bane.
Yes.
Yeah, well, go ahead and do it if you want to.
Wait, what am I supposed to? Let the games begin!
There you go. Anyways, for the new Terminator movie, for some reason, the woman who's financing it, has her husband, who kind of has this really, like, this friendship bromance with Tom Cruise. So there's kind of this talk that Tom Cruise might come on, I guess it would be Terminator 5, and be John Connor. In all fairness, though, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I'm a Tom Cruise fan. And especially after seeing Ghost Protocol and seeing what I've seen of the Jack Reacher movie, you know, it could be kind of, I mean, it would be different, but it could be kind of interesting. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
No.
Okay, now see, I want to say no, but
I said it for you. Don't worry.
No, but it's just I hate Tom Cruise as a person, but I love him in movies. It's weird.
Like, I can take him or leave him as a person. I really don't care. I try to, as best as possible, I do try to divorce the person from their job. His acting is okay for me. He did redeem himself quite a bit in my esteem in terms of Ghost Protocol. But no, I just don't see him doing it. And while, again, with the divorcing the person from the job, say what you want about Christian Bale, maybe I was the only person, but I loved Salvation. I thought Terminator Salvation was fantastic.
Ugh.
Yeah, like I said, that's fine. If I'm the only person in America, then...
I'll go with I didn't mind it. So real middle of the road.
Next to Spider-Man 3 and The Amazing Spider-Man and a couple other movies, that was the other movie that I really wanted to walk out of.
The Amazing Spider-Man, I mean like new one that just came out?
Yeah.
But just watch that. It's actually not that bad.
Really?
I like Emma Stone.
Yeah, I thought I was going to hate it, and I actually walked out.
Oh.
I liked it.
I paid the ticket to go see it.
Oh, yeah, that's your problem.
I paid the $12, $13 ticket to go see it, and it felt like this should be on a double bill with Twilight. Okay, so in other news, another Netflix news, Disney signs an exclusive streaming deal with Netflix, whereas now Netflix will be showing every Disney movie, all the classics. And of course, I think a lot of this won't go into effect till, I think, 2016. However, in 2013, they will be showing like Dumbo and...
The Disney Vault is open again, finally.
Yeah. Ooh. The vault is open. Yeah. That thing is more secure than a firmly locked chastity belt.
Well, they have his head in there, too. They got to keep that protected.
I love how that urban legend persists.
It'll never go away.
What, the chastity belt or the
Walt Disney's frozen head?
Okay. I get those confused sometimes.
Yeah,
so that's exciting. So if I know you've been waiting to watch, Matt, for us to review the Tinkerbell movies, you know, the Secret of the Flying Wings or whatnot, we can do that. And, you know, Michael, that will be your assignment one time. You will watch all of them back to back. Probably 10 of them, the direct-to-video ones.
I'll just write my eulogy. Now you guys can read it.
I gotta let you know. I have three daughters, and one son from my first marriage. My oldest daughter is 5 and a half, and if you think that I haven't seen a Tinkerbell movie, guess what?
Yeah, I watched them this past summer.
I will say this: they're definitely kids' movies, but they are pretty decent quality. I found myself watching the last half of this most recent one that just came out. It wasn't bad. I wouldn't purposely go out of my way to watch it, but I mean, I didn't kick my kids out of the room, and say take the DVD to the bedroom and go watch it. So yeah, we can definitely review some Tinkerbell movies if you want, bro. I'm down. Come tinker me, bro.
Whoa. Only on the Matterhorn.
All right.
Okay, so...
Real dark.
It really is. It's fun stuff. Let's see. Okay, so... And now this is the news we've been waiting for. And I know last night when Matt and I were kind of chatting about a couple things, I brought up this George Lucas article that I found. Actually, a lot of people were talking about it. And in fact, I posted it on Facebook a few days back, and Matt commented on it, and one of the first things that he said was, you know, I think we got to make sure we bring this up on the show, because we're probably going to get into it a little bit, so I can't wait for this one.
Jeez, okay.
Especially for the big fart I had in the face for the whole Spider-Man comment, which I still think I'm right. George Lucas, now this article is from Collider. In the title of the article, I'll just go ahead and, because pretty much the title says it all, George Lucas clarifies consultant role on Star Wars Episode 7, says he doesn't really have much to do, so pretty much he's not really going to be a consultant, because I guess with the fan base and everything that's written about it, who doesn't know the story of, you know, Star Wars saga and what should happen, and pretty much what he never, you know, what he did do with the newer episodes.
And if you listen carefully right after you read those words, every time you read those words, if you listen carefully, there is a worldwide collective sigh of relief.
Okay? I couldn't be happier.
Look, I know that your initial, or that your take on it is from the perspective of you have read more pieces that this author has done, and you feel that he unnecessarily denigrates anybody he writes about in a fanboy fashion.
Right.
I don't, again, and like what I had said last night, I've only read the one article by him. I might have, you know, doing show prep before, may have read something, but I don't recall him specifically. And every word of that particular article, including the tone with which it was written, rings true. You can't find a Star Wars fan. Yeah, hey, dude, that's okay. I'm a Star Trek and a Star Wars fan, so whatever. You can't find a Star Wars fan who is happy with what Lucas has done in the last 15 years. That being said, yeah, everybody's really happy that he can't touch it now. That there's going to be people who really know what they're doing and really have an idea of where it needs to go and be able to actually create it effectively.
Well, I guess I'm just... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think I'm just kind of sick, and every time you hear about anything Star Wars, and not with the guy who wrote this, but just... anywhere, any place, you know, any you know, thing about movies and whatnot, if it's anything about Lucas or anything about Star Wars, it's just always like, you know, there's always the thing, well, I'm just glad George Lucas isn't doing this. There's this big collective hate for George Lucas, which don't get me wrong, I mean, I definitely see why. Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, I enjoyed episode one. I'm with everybody on episode two. But I thought episode three wasn't bad. Wasn't horrible.
I firmly am in the camp of episode three should have been aptly named Star Wars Episode Three. I'm really sorry about the other two.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes perfect
because
sense.
It was good. Aside from the birth scene at the end of the movie, I was totally pleased with how the third one turned out. Yeah. Now, this is where I was going with last night when you were like, okay, no, wait, gotta stop and we can do it for tonight. There is a documentary. It's available on Netflix. It is called The People Versus George Lucas. This documentary is very even-handed. It discusses the two different aspects that there are to George Lucas and Star Wars. Number one, the side that says George Lucas is the creator. It is his artistic work, and he has the right to do with his work as he pleases. Versus the public, the people who consume the art. It's much like poetry. It doesn't matter what the artist or what the author of the poem intended, what the speaker of the poem wanted to be said, it's what the reader gets from it. And what the people got from Star Wars was the most amazing thing they had ever seen. And what George Lucas did once he got all the money and he was then finally able to say, but this was my real vision, people were like, dude, you need to take your vision and shove it back up your ass because it sucks. If we had known, if you had gotten to pull your vision off in the first place, Star Wars would not have taken off like it did. And that's the big key thing. Yes, George Lucas has every right to do with what he wants to do with his creation. And people have to respect that. But he also has to respect that what he created initially is what the people wanted. And it's kind of like you get this big love-hate thing going on. And it even goes back to the first movies. When people debate which of the original trilogy is the best, Star Wars never comes up. They always debate Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. People will always fight over those two. Interestingly enough, that the only movie that George Lucas directed was Star Wars. The other two movies were not directed by him. Now, he was a huge consultant. He was involved in the story, and he was involved in the production, but he wasn't there on the set every day. And you could see the difference. The first movie is slow, very lacking on the character development for the first half of the movie. It's a little disjointed, and then it eventually comes together by the time they get to the Death Star. But the second and third movies are just outstanding, constant, really good pace, great stories, and people will always debate which one's better, Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi.
I've always heard Empire Strikes Back or New Hope. Usually, I've always been told and heard that Return of the Jedi was the worst of the
people
because of the Ewoks.
Yeah, people always get upset about the Ewoks. And here, and even then, though, George Lucas was on to something. Yeah, I will give George Lucas this one credit in terms of episodes 1, 2, and 3. Jar Jar Binks was, to this generation, the Ewoks of our generation. Okay, I would have been happier even as a kid, because I was 7, and Return of the Jedi was the first one I got to see in the theater. I would have been happier even then if they had been Wookiees, like they were supposed to be, instead of Ewoks. However, I was 7, so Ewoks were pretty kick-ass for me. Same thing's happening here. I think when kids think back on it and look back on it, they're going to remember Jar Jar Binks being some stupid Ewoky thing that they thought was pretty funny and they liked. But they would have been happier. They'll look at back at it objectively and say, "Yeah, Jar Jar Binks still sucked." I'd say the same thing about Ewoks. I really, you know, I take them or leave them. For me personally, I think it would have been better with Wookiees, but I don't care. It's Ewoks. It's the same thing here. And that was George Lucas looking at it from a kid perspective, and he did the same thing with Jar Jar Binks. So I will give him credit for that specific thing, even though it completely bit him in the ass the second time around, because all of his established fans, which were greater than the fan base their kids that they were bringing in for episode 1, hated Jar Jar Binks, but the kids loved them. Same thing with the Ewoks.
However, if we didn't have Ewoks, we might not have had Willow. But in closing with the George Lucas thing, we also have to keep in mind of, you know, the great things that without him we might not have had. I mean, that includes Indiana Jones. I mean, Spielberg, you know, it was involved with it as well. But really, I mean, George Lucas was saying that he would love to make a movie that was a throwback to the old adventure serials that he remembered, you know, in the 40s, you know, going to the movie theater and watching. It's the same with Willow. He's the one that came with the story of Willow.
Look, I'm not trying to say that, you know, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have Pixar either. So I'm not saying that he didn't contribute to the world beyond Star Wars in and of itself, because with Lucasfilm and with ILM, you know, he definitely has contributed far above and beyond anything most people will ever realize.
Yeah, he's kind of like the Al Gore of movies, but more people don't like him.
You know, well, it's just because if George Lucas wanted to show polar bears drowning, people would watch. That's all.
Yeah, it would.
See?
All right. Well, no, I will. That's a good recommendation for that movie, that documentary. I mean, I have been wanting to see it, but I've been kind of holding off because I didn't know if it was going to be like an anti-Lucas movie. So I'm glad to hear that it kind of...
It's fair and balanced.
Yeah.
I really think it is. I think that at the end of the day, I think that the documentarian does fall into the camp of, you know, he's mad at Lucas, but it really is an even. I did have to give him credit. It was
like he's one of those guys that are like, I want to try to understand. I want to know
that's exactly what it is. I'm trying to understand. And there's one factoid that I do want to present that I think is very interesting that he does bring up, is that George Lucas went before Congress when Ted Turner bought the rights to the MGM catalog and started colorizing everything.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, you know, it's a travesty. You can't colorize that material. You can't go back and change something that the public has come to love. And then he goes and destroys the original masters to episodes 4, 5, and 6. So, yeah. Good job, George Lucas. Anyway, any other news?
No, that'll be it. I think... We will be moving on into...
3 squared, I think.
Three... Yeah. No.
Oh, no. Our new segment.
No, new segment.
Yay, new segment.
All right, yes. Man, all this talk of negativity going around the past hour just kind of tainted our brains of how much fun
something
we
kind of.
I want to see Bane...
Well, Tim's right next to you. Let's turn on the video, Mike.
Well, we have like a line of PBR cans. And it's like, just grab one of those suckers and just smash it on your head.
I don't know. I can't.
Well, no, you don't really do it.
They're union. They're union made. That means they probably would fall apart really fast.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. If they're union made, they just probably need to take a break every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, because they might be exported to China.
All right. So it does, though, however, present a very good segue into the our new segment that is franchises that should or should not be made into movies, or even continue to be made into movies. And what brought that topic up, Tim? Tell us.
It's Transformers. That series, the trilogy of flicks that should have just stayed one movie.
Yes.
But then it became two movies. But then it became three movies, which the third kind of, to me, made up for the second movie, but still wasn't that great of a movie. Well, they're doing a Transformers 4, and once we thought Michael Bay was not going to direct it, he's going to direct it.
Is Mark Wahlberg in it?
And Mark Wahlberg is in it. Yeah, he's. That was after thinking about doing like Jason Statham or something, but Mark Wahlberg is in it. However, they're wanting to base Transformers not in Los Angeles or not, no destruction in New York. So I guess the Avengers already, blew that place to shreds after Godzilla. And I'm sure Transformers also did as well in a previous flick. However, Transformers in China. They're wanting to do Transformers in China in hopes to get a wider release. And I'm sure there's also like trying to get a tax break and getting some kind of funding for it. Because apparently in China, they only show American films, like the big budget ones that are released in 3D and or in IMAX. Like big screen, big budget. I have it right here. Quoting, I believe this is from Vulture. The Chinese only exhibit 3D and or IMAX films. So we've already seen a number of studios tack on a 3D post conversion to some of their blockbusters in order to automatically qualify them for a Chinese release. So Chinese not only ruined the Red Dawn remake, we were kind of having to take them into account for, studios in order to make a ton of money.
Do they like to see it in the big screen and in 3D so that when they're later making the toys, they have a better idea of what it looks like in their head?
Yeah, I mean, it's the eyes, the eyes really need, they need the glasses.
That is awesome.
To do that. Yeah, because the fine detail also. Because, whenever you grab, go to Target and you get...
Transformers toys are amazing.
I know. I mean, you look at usually the butt of the action figures and it has, like, the copyright date and whatnot. I mean, you have to have a fine, fine sense of what you're doing.
Those
to
kids. Get that.
Quite frankly, I can't wait for the day that you leave the physical movie theater. You get up out of your seat after watching like a Transformers movie or the next Star Wars movie or whatever, and you get up and you walk out of the theater and you deposit your popcorn bucket in the trash can and look up and you're already inside of a Walmart.
Yeah.
In the toy section where they have the merchandise. And you're like, wow, how did that happen?
Yeah, but after spending $80 on a bucket of popcorn, I don't know if I'm going to have any money to spend at Walmart.
Well, that's why it's Walmart, because everything's cheap.
Yeah.
And
that's
already
what
made in China.
You can buy the 5-disc...
why don't they just
Batman
film it?
Movie.
If they want to do it in China, why don't they just film it inside of a Walmart? Everything's made in China there already.
You get the best of everything.
And I think people would actually be excited for things in a Walmart getting destroyed.
That is true. Well, then you're also going to cater to the trailer demographic.
Sure, you get the trailer park demographic. But it is interesting, though, that they keep continuing... they keep continuing franchises like this. For instance, with Transformers.
Yeah,
the first
what
movie
can they
was
add
really
on
cool.
to it?
The first movie was really cool. Well, just like the Transformers series, there were comic books for Transformers as well. There's a great wealth of material. I mean, if you think about it, there's only a dozen Transformers, really, that they've even covered in three movies. So, and a couple of them were really more or less even made up for the movies.
Right,
And there were hundreds of Transformers. And there were probably, I want to say, upwards of 25 or 30 quote-unquote main characters, people who really had main storylines and really contributed to stuff and what have you. So there is still a wealth of material to draw from. But I think that franchises like Transformers getting made into movies, whether or not you agree with whether or not they should, because I think that I think it really has to do all of this stuff, whether or not you agree it should be made into a movie, all these franchises, especially from the ones that are from our childhood, more or less. I think it's a nostalgia thing. I think it's because we live in an age where not only were our childhoods infinitely more interesting, we live in an age where we have the ability to relive parts of our childhood in a much, much easier way and in a great vacuum, more or less.
But there's only so much you can do that.
But there's not. That's just it. You know, think about it. Every single thing from your childhood, virtually every single thing from your childhood has already been done. G.I. Joe, Transformers, Superman, Batman, Spider-Man.
Ninja Turtles.
Everything. So all of these things that have made a great impact, Star Trek, that have all of these massive impacts on our culture and specifically on our childhood and how we grew up and how we relate to these things, are able to be recreated. And movies provide that perfect vacuum for it. And I think that's why we see it. It's not so much, I really don't even think it's laziness, because a lot of people are like, man, it's just so lazy. Nope, there's no original ideas anymore. And I think even Tim, I'm pretty sure we talked about it, not at length, but I think we probably brought it up once or twice in the previous episodes. I really am starting to think now that it's not even so much about laziness as it is the ease with which we can bring back our childhoods, if even for a moment. The problem becomes, it's kind of like Hogwarts Castle. Okay, you create in your mind something that's unique to you. When you read the way that a book describes, or when you first see Castle of Grayskull from He-Man, that image is burned into your mind, and when it is presented to you in a different way in a movie, you're like, well, right. I don't know how to deal with that.
It's not the idea of bringing popular things from our past and creating a film about it. You know, it's just Transformers, the idea of it, you know, when they were making it, you know, Spielberg, oh, he's going to be producing and Michael Bay is directing this big action Transformers movie. Groovy. But there's only, then you have like the Avengers, and don't get me wrong with like the Transformers, I mean, special effects, I've been blown away watching it. Tons of people work on it. Talented people. Very talented. They can do, I couldn't do any of that stuff at all. But then you look at the Avengers and you look at The Hobbit, something that we've all grown up reading. There's the cartoon, same with Lord of the Rings. Comic book movies, other books that have been made that are based on like nostalgia, you know, or just like what we just grew up reading and or watching cartoons as a kid. I mean, even with Transformers, there was the cartoon movie that came out, I guess, in the mid-80s.
With Orson Welles.
Yeah, Orson Welles was in it. But it's just like you have the Avengers and you have like Thor and Captain America, to where they have these interesting stories, but they made them unique in their own way. And it's because of that uniqueness that really brings, you know, that kind of draws the attention of a number of people that go and watch it. Now, I guess say what people will about, you know, Transformers movies, where it might very well be a movie to where people just go and watch it just for crazy explosions and action. But that kind of seems like the mentality with a lot of these big blockbuster, huge ass, you know, films that are coming out and have been coming out, kind of like with Red Dawn, to where the substance, there's nothing like really, I mean, in my opinion, in my definition of unique, you know, there's just nothing really unique about it. Nothing like you can watch it and be like, you know, I can watch this 50 million times, you know, I can show this to my kids and be like, oh man, this is such a cool movie. I remember this movie experience when I was watching it, when this happened, you know, I'm sure it was kind of like whenever you went and saw Return of the Jedi, you know, when you were 7 years old, Matt. It just kind of, I mean, of what I've noticed with my own young cousins and them watching some of these movies, it's just, there's not that compelling, that interaction that people have with movies. You know, that just seems like there's kind of like a lack of it. And that's where I'm kind of getting at with like the Transformers movies, is that it doesn't really, you know, have that component. And again, in my opinion, I think the whole novelty of big giant robots fighting in a city has kind of worn off. And that's just
I agree. I guess my opinion is more on the idea of franchises, of the seemingly never-ending supply of, you know, just churning out things that have already been done to the detriment of original ideas. So then are we all agreed that Transformers just needs to stop?
Yeah, it should have ended at one.
It should have ended with one, but continued on with, I guess, Transformers Prime. I've watched a couple episodes of it.
Yeah,
it
was kind of that's a good transition, is do like a good, it's not a reboot, but bringing it back into the public eye. You do that big movie with Transformers 1, and then you just branch off into a TV show,
series. Clone Wars, like Star Wars Clone Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then do a movie maybe 5 years later.
Exactly. You know? Don't pump them out every 2 years, even though I am excited about the Star Wars movies every 2 years. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's also what they're going to be doing again with like the Bond. Well, we'll talk about Bond later, but with the James Bond movies.
But it's for certain things, when something like Transformers isn't a kind of subject that can have a very deep emotional connection. There can't really be crazy, like, personal stories in it. It's literally just robots fighting. It's what the basis of it is, other than Beast Wars was really good.
As someone who spent many hours playing with his Transformers and living out the adventures of Optimus Prime and Bumblebee and Megatron, I must wholeheartedly disagree with you, sir. They were not just robots fighting.
Okay.
They were
at least with the way that they
my Autobots defeating the Decepticons.
This is my Optimus Prime. In there are many world. Like it, but this one is mine kind of style.
Yes, exactly.
You held your Autobot in your left hand, and you had your pair of Decepticons in your right.
I had my pair of Decepticals.
But yeah, so I agree with the don't do a movie every 2 years because it's not the. At least the way that they've reestablished the content of Transformers is it's robots fighting with people doing whatever they want to do to help us in the very end. But if they had established it more of a personal side with a lot more story to it that you can connect to, then you can do it every couple of years.
Like Twilight. I can watch Twilight's every 2 years.
The hell's wrong with you?
Oh my god, I almost punched him.
I'm kidding.
I almost just destroyed everything in the room right now.
I'm kidding. Luckily you're
I don't in. I don't think you can say I'm kidding enough to save you right now, sir.
I'm kidding. Okay, I'm kidding. It's okay. I'm gonna hold a thing of crushed red pepper and oregano just ready to
we're in the back. Kitchen, let it be.
We are broadcasting from the kitchen.
Delightful. All right, so then Transformers, it needs to just go away. Good. All right, so that's interesting. I think this is going to be interesting how we kind of play this segment out as it goes along.
Three squared.
I think it's time for the three squared.
Over a year ago, we thought, okay, well, let's pick out our favorite iconic composer. Yeah, I guess just the iconic composer. And one person that came to mind was John Williams. However, Matt took John Williams. He took it from my hands, and I was reluctantly forced, into going with Danny Elfman.
Hang on. How are you not reluctantly forced into something?
I don't know.
You're either forced or you're not, or you just reluctantly do it.
Matt, I like Doctor Who.
All right.
I reluctantly was forced into liking Doctor Who.
Yeah. It's like
Tim gave me eyes.
It's not rape unless you consent to it, you know?
I was waiting for the rape to start in this show.
Yes,
the rape was strong.
But was it legitimate? That's the question.
Would you like to kick off your list?
Yes, and since people may or may not have waited a year to hear about my choices for John Williams, I've decided to give you more than just three of my favorite movies of his. John Williams is a man who is truly prolific. I've said it a million times. I'm going to be really sad when he dies because I don't know who's going to fill his shoes. I'm not trying to say that, Tim, your choice is a bad choice, because it's really not. Your choice is really, really good, but I really just think we're going to lose, like, the Mozart of our time, the Beethoven of our time, really. And the, I mean, we're talking about a guy that has done everything from the score, scoring on Gilligan's Island, to Star Wars and Indiana Jones. It's an incredible amount of work that the man has done. And he's like, he doesn't stop. He's done the Olympics theme. You know, just everywhere you turn, it's freaking John Williams. And so I decided, instead of just giving you my three favorites, I went through, starting from the 60s, and I picked my favorite movies from each decade. And these are not the the easy ones that people have will immediately know offhand. So I did not pick any Star Wars movies or anything like that. I did not pick Jurassic Park or anything like that. So I'm hoping that you'll like this list that I have come up with. From the 60s, I chose Valley of the Dolls. From the 70s, I chose... I couldn't decide. I wanted to just try and do one movie per decade, but I really couldn't here on the 70s. So I went with Poseidon Adventure and Towering Inferno. From the 80s, I went with Always. And for those who like... Who didn't think it was possible for the combination of Holly Hunter, Richard Dreyfuss, and John Goodman to pull something off? There you go. From the 90s, could not decide on this, so we got two of them here. Hook, as well as Far and Away. And from the 2000s, The Patriot. And from the current decade, I went with Lincoln, which is... something we'll be discussing soon, but also a fantastic score. All of his movies are really good, not just the ones that you'll immediately note. If you go back and just listen to the movies, listen to just the music from these movies that I've talked about, I think that you will find a new appreciation for it, especially if you're like, wow, hang on, I didn't realize that, you know, John Williams did the music for that. And you're like, you know, so please check out any of these movies, that even if you had never seen them before. So just fantastic stuff. Can't say enough good things about it. And since it's an iconic thing, I don't think I need to keep discussing it. Tim, what was your choice?
All right, so Danny Elfman. So Danny Elfman, other than being involved with Oingo Boingo for the past however friggin' long he's been doing it, he has composed a lot of super iconic flicks. However, he has been getting a lot of slack for... I guess some of his stuff... Well, I guess same thing with John Williams, just kind of like some of the stuff kind of sounding the same. In a way, it's like you look at Scrooged, kind of sounds like Beetlejuice, and, you know, it just kind of goes on from there. So I've tried my best to pick my three favorite scores that he's done that have not been nominated for any awards, not even for, like, you know, Grammy Award, Academy Award, just any award. So that takes away the Simpsons theme song, that takes away... Jurassic Park, that takes away Big Fish, that takes away...
I do want to say this, though.
Not Jurassic Park. Sorry, that's John Williams. Yeah. My bad.
In Danny Elfman's defense of things sounding familiar, the two examples that you gave, though, were from the same decade. And I think that, you know, things that work within that framework of the time, I don't think you can hold that against him.
But also with Men in Black.
Well...
As well.
Yeah.
But he was nominated...
That is a little repetitive. That is a little repetitive. Compared to Scrooged and Beetlejuice. But I love Beetlejuice and Scrooge, and I think that their scores are awesome.
Oh, no, I know. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I totally agree.
Definitely. You can't be mad at someone for doing the same thing, kind of, because then you would hate every director that's made more than one movie.
Right.
It's, you know, it's...
Yeah, they, and again, that's not style. My...
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, what people... You can't be mad at someone for that reason.
Right. Well, they have a trademark. Like, same thing with John Williams. To me, and Matt, you can... correct me or agree or whatever, just with like John Williams, you know, whenever I think of him, I think of like the, you know, the kind of like the, he can do the big swooping epic type sound,
yeah.
You know, like what he did right. With Lincoln and just, you know, with a lot of his movies. And with Danny Elfman, it's just like kind of like the itty gritty, you know, the harsh violins and the really creepy sounding and the really eerie, you know, kind of like, you know, just the fantasy, you know, I think he's a really good fantasy.
John Williams will wake you up in the morning. And Danny Elfman will get you through the day.
Yeah, and then killing somebody during the day as well. But yeah, so the movies that he has done, and again, can't mention Nightmare Before Christmas, that I like of his, and I'm going to go from newer to older. I'm going to have to say the Futurama theme song. For some reason, I think that one is... I really like that one. It hasn't been nominated
for anything. Futurama is the most nominated animated show ever.
The theme song has not been nominated. Of what I've looked up, it has not been. And I'm not talking about, there's the one that you have seen, like the opening credits, but then there's like the longer actual like 3 minute song,
yeah.
which is actually, you know, I think is really good. Now before that, I chose. So I'm going to have to lie about not using any of the ones that were an Academy Award. I do have one movie of his that was nominated for an Academy Award for the score, and that was Big Fish. Beautiful music. It doesn't sound like Danny Elfman, but you know it's Danny Elfman. It's just beautiful music, gorgeous, very emotional, and it just fits the film beautifully, in my opinion. The next one is Futurama. And then the last one would be Beetlejuice. To me, I think that's what really started his sound. That's what really, you know, if you ever hear, you know, like the Mars Attacks theme song or the theme to Planet of the Apes and again, Men in Black. It's just, you know, Beetlejuice. Even Nightmare Before Christmas, there's just like always hints of Beetlejuice. And it just seems like kind of John Williams with his early films, just even some of his stuff kind of references his early films. It's like with Star Wars, I think it's the Imperial March. A lot of that, you can hear that in Hook. Especially with Captain Hook, you know, it's just a lot of, again, it's not recycling old notes or recycling previous notes or doing it because, you know, he's run out of stuff or he's just going off of what he is known for. It's kind of like what Michael said before. It's why we like directors that make multiple films. It's just we like their style and we like what they compose. So, those are my three.
Delightful. Shall we go ahead and get to the movies?
Yeah.
Alright, so what movie would you like to do first? We have two movies this week. What movie would you like to do?
Since I think we both agreed on Lincoln, let's get that one out of the way.
Okay, Lincoln was awesome. What do you want to talk about?
Lincoln was a good movie.
Okay, so Lincoln is a movie. So about that in-depth discussion of movies.
So we lied. Well, Lincoln okay, so whenever I saw Lincoln, what I got out of it was that this was the best fact-based film, historical-based movie, that didn't add a whole lot of, like, fluff, as in kind of, like, battle scenes, like, showing battle scenes of the Civil War and, you know, the fights and whatnot. It was just dialogue and history and talking, a lot of talking and a lot of stuff going on and progression of how a bill was passed, how the 13th Amendment was passed. And that's pretty much the entire movie, how an amendment was passed. And I was entertained. Just all the performances, the music, how the movie kind of played out as a book, and you kind of, even though you knew what was going to happen at the end, you were just waiting for it to happen.
It was a Hoosiers thing. What happens, but you're still nervous as all get out, you know, when they come down to the boat, you know? Yeah, and that's the cool thing, is that this movie has a brief prologue and a brief epilogue just to kind of bookend it. But outside of those 10 minutes, not even that much, probably really about 7 minutes, the whole movie takes place in the month of January of 1865, and it's all about Lincoln's fight to get the 13th Amendment passed. And essentially, he needs to get it passed because he's worried that the courts will overturn his Emancipation Proclamation once the war is over. And they know that the war is imminently ending. The South at that point was completely broken. They had no supply lines left. It was literally just a matter of time. At that point, it became a war of attrition. And so what I think that people will get most out of this is that everything that I have read about Lincoln, and again, history major here, he was a man who understood his place in time. He knew how to play the long game. He purposely lost his presidential bid and his Senate bid at the same time back in 1856 because he forced his senatorial rival to couch himself in a slavery position in a debate. It cost him the Senate election, but when it came time for the 1860 re-elections and the presidential elections, the guy he went against couldn't run because he had no platform anymore. And so it opened the door for Lincoln to get in. he does the same thing here. He knows that it's up to him to make the move that's going to affect the long game. He knows that if the slaves have any chance to stay free, the amendment has to pass. It can't be on what he did. It has to be on what the people will do. And they show that in such a brilliant way. It's unbelievable. They also show his quirkiness, the way the way he tells stories and stuff. And hats off to Daniel Day-Lewis for just an amazing, amazing performance. I am certainly glad that Americans don't have the same reservations about people playing icons as British people do, because otherwise we would not have gotten Daniel Day-Lewis. And that is all I have to say about this movie. Just fan-freaking-tastic. If you are a fan of history, this movie is awesome. If you are not a fan of history, this movie is still great. I will not lie, though. You might find it to be a little bit long.
Agreed. And especially coming from a history major, Matt, and a history minor, me, check it out, definitely. And especially, I know some people have had a couple reservations of seeing the movie because the trailers, it was kind of like melodramatic, and a lot of people were kind of saying that we're not too sure if it's going to be really hammy because of how the persona of Abraham Lincoln was to a lot of people, especially to me, before I watched the movie, before I actually studied Abraham Lincoln back in the day. You know, he's kind of more of a expresses a caricature and shown off as a caricature than a than an actual, you know, human being as a president who actually did something that changed the whole outlook of America today. And I think this movie is definitely one of those that I think everybody, any American, period, should definitely watch it. Because I think, you know, we can all learn something from it. And were you going to say something, Michael?
Oh, I was just going to ask, does it go anywhere into his history of vampire killing?
No.
In the sequel, it will.
Okay.
In the sequel. Yeah. The movie ends with everybody holding hands, I think in Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh, right.
And they have his corpse, and they're going to bring him back.
They actually place the axe into his cold, lifeless hands.
Actually,
and then his eyes open, and then it cuts to the credits.
Yeah, but then after the credits, you know, he just like his arm just comes out of the grave.
Oh,
with
perfect
the
teaser ending! I love
it's terrific. Yeah, it's.
I did bet wrong when I saw one of the two Lincoln movies this year. I saw Vampire Hunter.
So you saw the better one?
Yeah.
Oh, so you saw the Academy more Academy Award worthy of the two. Alrighty, so Lincoln definitely a must see and highly recommended. Next flick is a little movie called Skyfall. You know, the little indie 88-minute movie.
I'm laughing at the 88 minutes.
With Dame Judi Dench as the lead role. Actually, you know, she has a huge role in this one. I mean, I'm sure aren't you a big Bond film fanatic?
Yeah, well, Bond, yeah, I'm a Bond fan. I haven't seen this one yet because of reasons.
You suck. What?
I do suck. I suck for that exact reason. But of all the screen caps people have been posting all over the internet, it looks really good. It looks pretty.
It does. Yeah, just like, it's just... what do you think about it, Matt? What do you think about the
okay. Movie? I thought that this movie... Okay, now, this is coming from a fan of apparently one of the 12 people that liked Quantum of Solace.
I enjoy Quantum of Solace.
Thank you. Okay, so there's apparently 13 people who like Quantum of Solace. I thought there was a very strategic move made with Quantum of Solace, and they did not want to fall into the GoldenEye syndrome. All right, so this is a little bit of backstory here. You're gonna have to follow me here for a second, okay? But it'll all come up to Skyfall, I promise. Now, it had been a long wait for Pierce Brosnan, all right, and they were so excited when they finally got him that they made GoldenEye. And they made GoldenEye so impossibly amazing, over the top, that nothing could possibly compete with it. Problem was, they tried. And so subsequently, the remaining Pierce Brosnan movies got more and more ridiculous because they kept trying to be more and more over the top. And they just got worse and worse and worse, and you just left after four movies going, what the hell, man?
However, a car chase on ice.
Really? You know, so... Yeah, so fine. So we go back, and now you get your break, and then they come back with Daniel Craig, and they bring Casino Royale. Now, Casino Royale it's even more amazing and over the top than GoldenEye was. Even comparable to when it was done. Casino Royale. Amazing, ridiculous, over the top. How are you going to compete with that? You don't. So what they did was, especially with Daniel Craig pushing, is they went back more to the books. They went back to the darker side of Bond, the more mercurial side to him. And they let the story pick up exactly where it left off so that you can see how Bond really does develop as a human being, not just as the stupid super spy that sleeps with everybody that creates over-the-top movies. And so it wasn't as well received because it was too slow, there wasn't any action.
Wait, which one are you talking about?
Quantum of Solace.
Oh, the Bourne movie?
The what?
The Bourne movie? Oh, it was shot like a Jason Bourne movie, you know, with the camera, shaky cam the entire time and quick cuts. It wasn't slow, it was just way too fast.
Now you can form your own camp of the people who thought that the Quantum of Solace was like a Bourne movie. Population one. So then you have that. But I thought that it was a fantastic movie. I loved the story. I loved how they made Bond darker, and I loved how they developed the characters and flushed them out more, especially with them. So now you've got another two and a half year buffer, and you bring back with Skyfall, and Skyfall does try to compete more or less with Casino Royale, but because they put the buffer between them, people are just remembering, they're just kind of fondly bringing back images of Casino Royale, but they're relying on the story from Quantum of Solace to bring them into Skyfall. So Skyfall is an amazing movie on its own, in terms of action, in terms of blockbuster, in terms of being over the top. And that is one of the reasons, I think, that's the primary reason why they allowed Quantum of Solace to be a buffer so that you didn't have the GoldenEye syndrome come across from Casino Royale. That being said, Skyfall is an amazing movie because they were very smart about how they planned that. Also, it is an amazing
mix. Wait, you're saying that Skyfall was the way it was because that's how, they planned Casino Royale one way. Okay, well, to piggyback off of Casino Royale, Casino Royale, they made Quantum of Solace. Well, then to piggyback off of
Quantum of Solace... They're not piggybacking.
But to continue on...
It's a direct
on,
sequel. It is literally...
Quantum of Solace to Skyfall?
No, Quantum of Solace is
literally
Casino Royale.
No, I know. Yeah. I know that.
So
but what I'm saying... Right. Okay, well, but then you're saying that Skyfall is... Well, okay, then, yeah, piggybacking off of Quantum of Solace. But it's completely different, though.
Exactly. It piggybacks in terms of characters and stories from the first two movies, but it is no longer part of that story. That storyline concluded with Quantum of Solace. But what they did by putting Quantum of Solace in the middle was they avoided having to try and top themselves for Casino Royale, because now all they have to do is do better than Quantum of Solace, which they did. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which movie was better for you, Quantum of Solace or Skyfall?
Oh, Skyfall by far.
Okay, but which movie is better, Skyfall or Casino Royale?
I still have to say Skyfall.
How long has it been since you've seen Casino Royale?
Exactly.
They purposely put a buffer so that you will like Skyfall and you won't compare it to Casino Royale.
I will disagree with that. I know it's not, because I've read all the interviews with Sam Mendes, who directed it, and the Barbara Broccoli, who produces them all, and it's just Sam Mendes was the one who came up with, I think him and I forget the other guy who wrote it, they came up with this together. Like, Sam Mendes was the one who kind of helped come up with this one, and it's also Sam Mendes is the one that's coming up with the follow up to Skyfall.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute. So at any rate. So for me, that's fine, disagree. But for me, that's where Skyfall falls in. So I think it is a fantastic movie in terms of its action, in terms of its story, in terms of doing whatever it wants to do. I also thought it was a fantastic mix of old versus new. Like, out with the old, in with the new, comparing the old with the new, and no more of the high-tech gadgetry and stuff. And then kind of reinvigorating the franchise without entirely rebooting it. So all those aspects were awesome. Here's the only problem that I have with Skyfall. Spoiler alert, because it is important to this to my review that I explain this, but it is a spoiler alert.
Michael, are you okay with this?
Yeah, I don't care.
Oh, oh. Shit, damn it, you haven't seen it.
No. I'm one of those weird people that, like, I enjoy spoilers.
It's about how you get there.
Yeah, exactly.
And, okay.
Tell me all the spoilers you want. You could have told me how The Sixth Sense ended, and I would have liked the movie probably a lot more. So I would have been looking for those little things the whole time.
Okay. They went to too many pains to make James Bond a real person, okay? Skyfall is the name of his childhood home. It's the estate that he grew up on before his parents were killed. And his parents were actually named, like, you know, Bill and, you know, Dick and Dora Bond, okay? So what they've done is they have created they've changed the mythos and turned James Bond into an actual person instead of a secret agent. The beauty and the longevity of the James Bond franchise is that it doesn't, while the actor who portrays him is of great importance, it does not define the character of James Bond. He is just 007. So you can breathe new life, you can change the direction, you can put your own spin on it, much the same way as like Doctor Who. You have a different doctor. He's still the same doctor, it's still the same mythos, but he puts his own spin on it because he's a different iteration. It's the same thing. It's not Sean Connery. Sean Connery is his own person. So you could imagine some guy who was named Sean Connery who went into the Secret Service and it was given the code name James Bond. He's 007. And then he moves on and he's eventually replaced by Lazenby, for Her Majesty's Secret Service. And then comes back. And then eventually, yes, you have Roger Moore, and then eventually you have Timothy Dalton. And so you have this mythos where you can have the character of James Bond still be a secret agent who constantly saves the world in overtop ways and sleeps with all the hot chicks. But you get your own, you get a different person to play that role who puts their own spin on it. But it can still be interchangeable. They kill it. They kill that part of the mythos by trying to make him a real person with Daniel Craig playing him in Skyfall, because they've gone and created the real James Bond, okay? And it shatters, for me, it shatters the entire James Bond mythos, because who in their fucking right mind actually goes and becomes a secret agent and uses their real fucking name?
And then tells everybody about it.
And tells everybody about it and has a fucking huge family history that's super rich and has an estate. You don't do that. So, for me, that's destroyed it. Now, this is purely conjecture on my part. I think that they did that because Daniel Craig has signed on for two more movies. This was the 23rd Bond film. Does not include Never Say Never Again, which is a little Jaunt remake? Subset. No, it was a Jaunt subset that came out the same year as the first Roger Moore one.
But that was a remake of Thunderball. Yeah.
Yeah. So at any rate, it doesn't include. So it's 23 films. Skyfall is the 23rd film. Daniel Craig signed on for two more movies. I think that MGM and Sony are in big financial trouble right now. There was even talk that this James Bond was not going to get made.
Oh, yeah, that was forever it was not going to get made.
I think that they finally had worked out when they inked Daniel Craig, I think they inked the next two movies as well. And I think they've done this so that they can close it off at 25. I really don't think there's going to be more than 25 Bond films. I think they'll do whatever it is they're going to do with Daniel Craig at the end of the 25th movie, and that's it. And I think that's why they did this with Skyfall. But I still don't like it. I do not agree with making James Bond a real person in that universe. He should have just remained a secret agent with a code name.
Right, now, I agree with... I actually never thought of that until what you just said about... Yeah, he's a secret agent, goes, like... has to deal with the worst people on the planet taking over the frickin' world. Oh, hey, my name is Bond. James Bond. Let me spell it out for you. Yeah, and then they, you know, turns out his name's not like, you know, Dick Ramsey or anything like that.
Exactly, yeah.
Nigel Cummington is what I imagine.
Nigel Cummington. I can see where you're saying with, like, there's kind of like they have this plan of doing these movies, of making these last few flicks. However, what I have read, and again, I try to keep up with everything about James Bond, because it just seems like with the financial problems with MGM and who is going to be taking over it, especially now with Sam Mendes's movie doing so well, he's going to, you know, probably not, I don't think he's going to direct the next one, but I think he's going to produce it or co-write it or just do the story or whatever. They're going to continue on after. They're just going to continue on after Daniel Craig. Now, for a while, they're thinking about having a black James Bond. And I was telling you, Matt, the other day that
Idris Elba.
I don't know where I got Chris, but yeah, he was in Prometheus. He has this Ashoka Luther on BBC.
Yeah, BBC. Right?
Yeah, so apparently they wanted him to do it.
He was also on The Wire.
Oh, he was on The Wire. Yeah. That's right. That's another.
That's where he got started, but that's where everyone knows him from.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much he's been in so many things. I'm sure if anybody has no clue who I'm talking about, look him up. You'll recognize him. Apparently, they're wanting him to kind of take over the role. However, he can't do it. He's, you know, too old. He thinks he's too old. I'm sure they think he's too old. And I mean, same reason why Daniel Craig doesn't want to continue on doing the movies is because, you know, quit while you're ahead. Like Sean Connery, who I'm sure would still probably come back and reprise the role if he wanted to. But I would have to disagree with you in saying that the reason why Skyfall had the reaction, especially the reaction that I have with it, where I really enjoyed it, and the reason why I can say now that I enjoyed it more than Casino Royale, isn't because that's why they planned it, was because they had the buffer movie Quantum of Solace. I just kind of think that's kind of how it happened, where they had Quantum of Solace that it did really well at the box office, but a number of people, more so than probably, I don't know, Moonraker or Live and Let Die, where people kind of had a problem with, you know, a certain James Bond film. It was really with Quantum of Solace. I mean, it came after Casino Royale, which was a huge hit. People, you know, it jump-started on the entire series, the whole ideology of James Bond, you know, a kick-ass guy, kick-ass, you know, movies to look forward to. Having Quantum of Solace, it was a letdown to a number of people, including myself, I guess. So that's another reason why not just the MGM financial breakdown, was that I think they were just looking for the right story, the right director, and also the right time. And especially now that it's the 50th anniversary of James Bond, that's why Sam Mendes and the other writers incorporated the use of, I guess, some of the throwbacks, like his Walter PPK and his Aston Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just like how they did it was fantastic. And again, another spoiler, at the very end, what I absolutely loved was the introduction of Moneypenny, who Moneypenny ends up turning out to be.
Yeah,
his office.
Yeah, Moneypenny.
You know, yeah, just like when he walks in, like, you never see him go into an office that is his, and he walks in, puts his coat up, you know, throws his hat, or, you know, puts his hat on it, and just walks in. I mean, it's brilliant. I just love the whole setup of it. I'm really excited for the next one, and just to see where they go along with it, if they do continue to do it that way.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, we have our predictions in, so we can come back to this show and we shall know if they continue on with Bond after 25 or if they close it off.
And I guess just the last thing that I want to say about Skyfall, good movie, Skyfall. Quantum Skyfall rises.
Skyfall of Solace. the casino Skyfall of Solace.
Let's go to the casino Skyfall.
It's the Skyfall Casino of Solace. There you go. That's good.
Is the bad guy Javier Bardem?
I think we have probably found at least for this decade. No, I'm sorry, because No Country for Old Men came out. 4 years, 3 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
2008.
Four years ago. So I'm going to say from 2005 to 2015, I think we found our bad guy of the decade. This guy, God, can he plays the best damn bad guy I've seen in years.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's...
And just what he does with this movie is that, again, a spoiler, it's just like, you don't know. I mean, he comes out, and it's just like the first time you meet him, Bond is strapped to a chair, and he's just walking into the camera, and the camera is just stationary looking at him. It's a long shot, and Javier Bardem is just walking right into the camera. And he's talking, and he's like telling the story about a mouse and trapping a mouse and all this stuff, and starting to get creepy, and he's dressed white, he has like this blonde hair. And as he gets up to Bond, you just notice that there's something just something different than what they've done with other Bond characters. And then he makes like a comment about like being uncomfortable or trying to make Bond more comfortable, or if he's feeling uncomfortable. But as he's doing it, he's putting his hands like on his thighs and like touching him. And so you know that it's like an introduction of a gay Bond villain. And just added this whole new dynamic to it that
dual purpose. Yes, I would definitely go with him being gay. He was also filling him up for devices.
Or that too. Mm. I mean
that's what's going on. It's right. He's doing it in a purposely sensual way to make Bond ill at ease while he's trying to tell him to be at ease and gently explain the story, but at the same time he's filling him up for devices,
right?
Because you know he's always had those collar pins, the stuff in his pants, yeah, the stupid belt things and all that shit, and that's everywhere that he's touching him. Again, the throwback to the old versus the new.
But then also with the nuances of how it makes a point to show how Bond reacts to it.
Well, yeah,
and how they both kind of look at each other. You know, I just think it just like the nuances kind of shows that there might be something a little. I mean, that there was, you know, they meant something a little bit more to the character. But then again, you know, like you said, it could be taken any way.
No, it's not like I'm actually. I'm not saying that he isn't gay. I got the impression that he was gay too.
Yeah.
Gaydar definitely went off a little bit when he walks in, and especially with his cadence of speech and what have you,
right.
The way he carried himself and whatnot. So. I think it was very dual purpose. It was meant to convey him being natural. And yes, he was gay. Maybe he's not, whatever. But I definitely took him to be gay as well. But then to try to again, constantly keep you guessing, because that's what this particular Bond villain is good at. Is guessing. It's keeping you guessing. So he's, you know, caressing him and being very sensual to keep Bond ill at ease, which you see visibly he's not happy about being touched that way. And at the same time, telling him to be calm and explaining the little story of, like, about the mice and stuff and how M's lying to him.
Right.
And then, but at the same time, he's feeling him up for devices. And it's just another way that Javier Bardem creates a character who can completely disarm you. It's just, oh, so.
And, you know, just like I said, it's great nuances, and that's what I liked about this movie, you know, compared to other ones, is that I think the humor of it, there's more of that classic, you know, kind of like the witty Bond-type humor that I think has been missing since, you know, I mean, the earlier Pierce Brosnan ones, especially, even before that, even with Roger Moore. It's just like the really witty kind of like what makes Bond handsome and why women love him. Why men want to be him in a way. It just really captures that in this movie. And beforehand, I was never not a Daniel Craig fan, because I thought he always kind of lacked, you know, the expression of emotion. And with this one, to me, I think, you know, you can see it a little more clearly, I guess, because, I guess, the dynamic of the movie and the dynamic of his relationship with M is kind of shown a lot more throughout the film. But,
Well, at the end of the day, it seems like we've both agreed that both of these movies that we've discussed tonight for the show are by far and away awesome, amazing movies that people need to see.
Yes, better than the movies that we reviewed that we both saw at the movie theater last year, I think.
Awesome. Well, I think we've done it. I think we have managed to get to the end of an episode here.
We did, after a year.
Yeah, a year. And
the longest episode, 1 year and like 2 hours.
Yeah. I think we now remember why we never showed up.
Maybe. So I don't know. Michael, you listened to a few episodes before you foolishly decided to join us. You know, do you think it was worth the wait?
Yeah. I think the world needs an SLS cast. It needs this kind of just talking about movies. Because look what happened in this span between the show not being from being on to not being on and being back. Twilight came out.
a couple Twilights.
Two Twilights came out. Thank God it's over now.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know. A battleship came out.
There is a Hungry Hungry Hippo movie in the works. A Lego movie is being made.
Okay. I'm all for a Lego movie.
I was going to say, I'm down with the Lego edition, but seriously, Hungry Hungry Hippo?
Yeah. They better are, you just
fucking around? Are you just fucking around? Because that's really funny.
I'm being serious.
Oh, that's terrible.
We need to
talk about that next week, about franchises that should not be made into movies.
Yeah. Hippos and, the Hungry Hungry starring Daniel Day-Lewis as Yellow Hippo.
Yes, and Leonardo DiCaprio as Purple Hippo. speaking of long movies, we need to make sure to go see Django Unchained at 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
That's it? All right.
Hey, he whittled it down from 3 hours and 13.
I've sat through all three Lord of the Rings extended cuts, and that's like 12 hours.
Yeah.
I can sit through anything.
There you go.
Django. Right.
Well, then I guess let's go ahead and wrap up the show. Just thank you for anybody who's still listening, and thank you for those who listened to who waited to come back. And we're glad
to be here. Didn't you say we got a few emails from people like saying how'd it do? What's going on?
Yeah, we had a few of those, but there were some people that I didn't even know that in my circle of Facebook people who were like, didn't you do a show? And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I've actually, some people that I've been going to school with have started to check out the show now, too. So we seem to be, at least making some headway. But, yeah, so you've been listening to the SLS cast here. Be sure to, you can follow us on Twitter at the SLS cast. You can send us emails to the SLS cast at gmail.com. You can also go to our website, slscast.com. Background music that you've been hearing is courtesy of the band, the awesome band, Cries of Solace. You can, not to be confused with Quantum of Solace, since we've been talking about a lot about that tonight. Cries of Solace, you can check them out on Facebook, also MySpace. People still have that, actually. It's pretty cool.
It's coming back.
It's making a retro comeback. A retro from 2005.
Retro comeback.
Oh, yeah, wow. much like retro 2002 from fucking Spider-Man. So you got MySpace.com and Facebook.com, both / Cries of Solace. You can also check them out at CriesofSolace.com. That is all I think that we need to add. So I guess till next time, this is Matt.
And this is Tim.
And this is Mike.
And I like the question on that.
Yeah, and be sure to join us next time when we discuss such movies as Euro, Dreams of Sushi, and The Grey, and quite possibly Life of Pi. We haven't really decided.
That's on the chopping block on maybe.
So, if you want to keep up with us, the movies that, any new release movies obviously are in the theater, but the movies that we call out are typically from Netflix, available on streaming. So you listeners are welcome to keep up with us, watch the movies, and let us know what you think, especially so we can get some essays. So bring those to us. And so the three squared for next week, we have decided, is going to be holiday movies that are not actually a part of the holidays. A good example would be Die Hard, or another good one would be like Long Kiss Goodnight. So we'll definitely want to hear any suggestions that people might have.
And we can't use those either.
And now we can't use those.
Yeah,
those
either. Great. Nor Lethal Weapon.
Yes, Nor Lethal Weapon.
Nor Lethal Weapon. So, put that one in there also.
Yeah, so those are the kinds of movies that we're going to be trying to come up with for our three squared for next week. I guess we will catch you on the flip side.
All right, take care, guys.
Adios.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.